And welcome to Sports with Carney, your host, Logan Carney, here with the third episode of this school year here at Robert Morris University. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us. I apologize for the late start, a little bit of technical difficulties, but still figuring things out, but everything's getting on track, and we're just about to get started. And before we go, I just have to give a shout out. I just want to say, a little info of my life. Don't ever say that I won't do something. Just to point out something right now, I'm currently reading the Harry Potter books to prove somebody wrong, because somebody, my girlfriend, Alexis Savinda, said that I don't get into her entertainment stuff. So out of spite, I'm going to read the entire Harry Potter books. Just thought that that'd be interesting thing to say, because I'm sure she's listening out there. But other than that, I'd like to thank you all for joining me here in this episode. This is the third episode. Last episode, live broadcast from homecoming game. That was Saturday. And I'd like to thank Ian for joining and all the guests that came on to the show, and we had a good time. So we gave away a couple prizes, asked some Robert Morris trivia questions. Real good show, in case you got to listen. We're going to start off the show sticking with Robert Morris. And we're going to talk a little Robert Morris football. The team is now 2-1. This is the latest that Coach John Banaszak has had a winning record into the season. This is the latest winning record that John Banaszak has had in the season. We're in week three people. And, I have a lot of hope in this football team. If you've read my articles, if you've watched my shows here at Robert Morris, the shows that I'm a part of, you would know that I have a lot of hope for this football team. A lot of hope. I have this team going 6-5, and I think they're going to finish in the top two in the NAC. And people may be calling me crazy, but think about it. The NAC is not a good conference. It is not. It is a horrible conference for FCS standards, all right? It's a bad conference. The best teams that they're going to have to face are probably St. Francis and Duquesne. And with those two teams are probably the only ones that are going to even. Those two teams are the only ones that are probably going to contend. The whole conference is just beating up on each other. It's just a bunch of bad teams beating each other. Kind of like the old Big East football, when everyone would finish 6-6, and you'd have a team like Pitt or West Virginia or Louisville or Cincinnati making a BCS bowl game with a 6-6 record. The NAC is not a good conference. And the Colonials can win. They got an amazing defense led by defensive lineman Gerald Ferguson. And the defense is, like I said, it's amazing. They are impressive. If you ever get a chance to come out and catch a Colonial football game, their defense is actually something to watch. It's really deep. A couple of shout-outs. Andy Smigura had that amazing, amazing interception in the homecoming game that ended up, almost was a touchdown. He turned it back, looked like a running back breaking about four tackles. Defense is impressive. So they only need, the problems have been, especially last year, the problem has always been their offense. And their offense looks good enough this year. Their offense has, a decent running game that was non-existent against homecoming game against VMI, which is something I don't think is going to be a trend. I don't think the running game is going to struggle all year. They have a great group of backs that any one of them could be starting for their team. Any one of them could be getting 20 carries. And, you know, they had an NFL player as their running backs coach. So, I mean, I have full hope in this offense. Their quarterback play has been something different. And I wrote an article that just got published, and it was about their quarterback, Jimmy Walker. Their defense was impressive. But the thing is, I expected that from the defense. I didn't expect Jimmy Walker to throw 291 yards. I didn't expect Jimmy Walker to throw for 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and only be sacked twice. All right, Jimmy Walker was by far the most shocking thing to come from Saturday's homecoming game. And he was fun to watch. He looked like Ben Roethlisberger out there. It's probably the best comparison. You know, he broke every time the pocket collapsed around him. The offensive line, they had good pass protection. Struggled a bit in the running game. I mean, that they were. I'm not going to hold the running backs accountable. They didn't really have any holes to open up. But, you know, if he plays like that, it's VMI. It's VMI. Don't expect Jimmy Walker to go out there and throw 291 yards. Don't expect him to throw 3 touchdowns every game. Don't expect him to dominate, is what I'm saying. Don't expect him to go out there and dominate every game. But he doesn't need to dominate. You know, I talked about this in my last episode. I talked about this in a TV show. This is something that I've talked about all year. This is nothing new. He just needs to be good enough. And if you watched him, he's clearly got the talent to be good enough. And I can't stress that enough. I mean, he was one of the better FCS quarterbacks I've ever seen in that game. And, I mean, his ability to escape the pocket was something to watch. His ability to extend plays was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. The only person I can think of to compare it to was Ben Roethlisberger in his early days in that game. And VMI is not a good team. He's not going to be able to escape the pocket as well against St. Francis, against Duquesne. You know, but if the defense can hold them, which they definitely can, they held Dayton to 10 points. Dayton, a team that hasn't been shut out since the 70s, longest record in college football, longest streak in college football. And Dayton, last year, the only time that they scored under 20 points was against Robert Morris when they won 13-0. So if their offense can put up 21 points, if they can put up 21 points against Duquesne, if they can put up 21 points against St. Francis, they can win those games. And those are the only two games in the AAC that actually worry me. You know, I have this team 6-5. 6-5 is good enough to win the NEC. And we'll get into this argument, this discussion a little bit later when we talk Pirates, because they're kind of the same thing. You don't have to be lighting the score up. You don't have to be impressive. You don't have to look like you're dominating. You don't have to look like a good football team. You just have to win. All right, you just have to win. Doesn't matter how you do it. Doesn't matter what the other teams are doing. But if you can win enough, if you're good enough to win your conference, you're good enough to make the tournament. All right, yes, there's a lot of luck to come in. I mean, we're not in the Mountain West, I believe, or was the conference with Youngstown State, North Dakota State. They have 6 teams ranked in the FCS. 4 top 10 teams, I believe, including the number 2 and number 6 team in the nation, who Robert Morris is playing, has already played Youngstown State, and they'll be playing North Dakota State this weekend. So they're not in a conference like that. Robert Morris doesn't have to win 8 games. They don't have to win 9 games. They don't have to blow out teams. They just need to win 6. If they win 6, there's a high chance that they can win the NEC. And that's, you know, it's upsetting to, you know, see a team win 6 and make the tournament. I understand that. If you're not a Robert Morris fan, if you didn't have to deal with a 2-win football team last year, I mean, 4-win improvement is significant. It's significant. In whether professional or college, 4 wins is huge. So even if Robert Morris doesn't win the conference at 6-5, they win 5 or 6 games, I'll be happy. And you all should be too. Because that's a team that has improved drastically. And if that happens, I know some people I know will disagree with me, but if that happens, then Bane is actually extended another year. I'm not saying they should lock him up for 3 years, 2 years, but if they win 5 games this year, he should be given another year. One more year. If they don't have a winning record, then gone. So thank you for joining me again. This is Sports with Carney. I'm your host, Logan Carney. Started a little bit behind schedule because of some technical difficulties. Still figuring out the radio studio. Still figuring things out. But we're on the right track. Hopefully we can get an episode that starts on time sometime soon. Remember, it's just me with a computer in here, so that's all this show is. Spoiler alert. But staying on the topic of Robert Morris, specifically Robert Morris football, I'm excited. I'm excited for him. I am. The Dayton win got me excited. The VMI win's got me extremely excited. And, you know, they should have been, it shouldn't have been 23-0. That's the thing. Like, it should have been 31-0. I don't believe. I mean, 32-0. My apologies. 3 field goals. 3. Or missed. And not just missed, hit the post. So a couple inches to the left, a couple inches to the right, it's 32-0. Which looks a lot different than 23-0. You know, that 30 number is when you start saying blowouts. But it was an impressive win. The defense was extremely impressive. When the offense, led by Jimmy Walker, somehow managed to be even more impressive, in my opinion, my personal opinion, because I didn't expect that from the offense this year. And they got North Dakota State coming up. That's going to be a loss. Not going to sugarcoat it. That they're probably going to get blown out. That's okay. They don't need to beat North Dakota State. It's not a conference game. It's not important. You know, it'd be a nice pride win. They put 10 points up. I said they should be proud. But it doesn't matter in the long run of things. It actually doesn't matter. So, again, if you're just joining us, thank you for tuning in. This is Logan Carney on Sports with Carney. Robert Morris football, I mean, you know, every year, you know, teams go through changes. Every sport, every team. You know, and there's still people that are doubting this team. Why can't it be this team? Why can't it? You know, the Twins in baseball won 59 games last year. They're in the playoffs right now. Diamondbacks won 69. They're in the playoffs last year. This year. Tampa Bay Buccaneers in football went 9-7 last year after being a consistently horrible team. You know, since they made the Super Bowl back in the early 2000s. So, why can't the Colonials make a jump like that? Because their defense is impressive. Their defense is extremely impressive. And that's the key to winning football. You know, they struggled. They only won 2 games last year because they didn't have a good enough offense to, you know, keep up with their defense. Had to keep sending their defense out of the field. But their defense is deep this year. They're still healthy on the offensive line, which was a big issue last year. They did lose a player injury. I don't know the update on him in his last game, and that significantly hurt their running game. But if they stay healthy on the offensive line, they'll be fine. And the team looks better. They look significantly improved. That's just the whole point of this. So we're approaching the 15-minute mark of the show, and you know, we're going to start talking a little more professional football as we move away from Robert Morris and go and look at the Steelers. And the Steelers, you know, they've impressed me. They're my Super Bowl pick, but
if they keep playing like they have been, I know they're 2-0. I know they're 2-0. I know they destroyed the Vikings. But if they keep playing like they have been, they're not going to win at all. They're not. They've had way too many penalties. And don't buy into the whole, this has always been a Tomlin problem. And it hasn't. Tomlin's only had one team ever finish in the top 10 in penalties, and that was last year. So it's only recently become a problem. Tomlin's had more teams finish in the bottom 10 than he has in the top 10. Tomlin's never had a team finish in the top 5 in penalties. You can look this up. You know, I got this right off, I think, Pro Football Reference. So this isn't a consistent Tomlin issue, which a lot of people like to believe. It's not. Yeah, they've had a lot of personal. They've had a lot of personal fouls throughout Tomlin. I mean, that's a problem. That's nothing new. But when you sign players like Mike Mitchell, that's going to happen. And, I mean, the team, but that's not the issue, though. That's not the bigger issue from the team. So, and here's the thing. This is something that has really kind of bugged me the past couple of years. But, like, I've always given the Steelers a pass. They have Antonio Brown, best wide receiver in football. The only person you can argue is better is Julio Jones. They have Le'Veon Bell, best running back in football. I don't think there's an argument for that. They have Ben Roethlisberger, top 3 quarterback. They have one of the best offensive lines in the league. You make the argument they have the best offensive line. And believe it or not, they have a decent tight end in Jesse James. In terms of catching the ball, he's not that good at blocking. But you know, if they have all that, why is their offense not as been as good as it seems? To me. Seems like to me they should be putting up 30 points a game. Seems like to me they shouldn't be 27th in the league on third down conversions, which is horrible. You don't win the Super Bowl if you're 27th in the league on third down conversions. There's no reason that a team with Ben Roethlisberger, with Le'Veon Bell, with Antonio Brown, with Martavis Bryant, with, you know, this offensive line of DeCastro and Pouncey and all them, Villanueva, there's no reason they should be 27th in the league on third down conversions. It is inexcusable, and you know, it's something that's getting ignored because they're 2-0. It's something that has always been ignored because of the playmakers. And I understand that the playmakers over the past couple years, the offense hasn't been able to play to the full potential because they haven't had everyone. You know, Brian and Bell, you know, won't stop. They won't put down the weed. Bell can't stay healthy. Ben's been better recently, but he can't stay healthy. Pouncey didn't get healthy till last year. But now they're all healthy. Now everybody in that offense is healthy. And they're 27th in the league in third down conversions. And they played the Browns and the Vikings. Thank you for joining us again. This is Sports with Carney. Your host, Logan Carney. This is our third show of the year here at Robert Morris University. So I'd like to thank you all for tuning in. We're talking Steelers here, and you know, I still have them pegged as my Super Bowl team, but They have to fix these problems. And these are significant problems. They are. Imagine what happens if they go to Foxborough in the playoffs and they can't convert on third down. Are they going to win? Imagine if they have 15 penalties. Are they going to win? Can you win like that? Can you beat these great teams like that? I mean, I don't even know if they can beat the injured Ravens right now playing like that. Ravens have had, you know, 8 interceptions through 2 games. They've 10 turnovers. That's an insane pace. They're not going to keep it up, and that's with 18 players on the IR. They've 18 players hurt. And they've had 10 turnovers for 2 weeks. You know, I mean, I still have the Steelers paid as my division team, but people, guys, they need to fix this. You know, we can't just keep ignoring that this offense has holes, that this offense has problems. And the crazy thing is, I don't know what else they can do to fix it. Because if you look at their numbers, if you look at each individual player's numbers, you would think that they'd be the greatest offense of all time. You'd think they'd be able to convert every third down. But they don't. They convert 20% last week. It was 28%, 26% around there against the Vikings. And yes, the Vikings have a great defense, but when you have this talented of an offense that you constantly brag about, that you have the best wide receiver, best running back, one of the best quarterbacks, the 3 skill positions. You got one of the fastest men in the league, Martavis Bryant. You got one of the best offensive lines. There's no reason you should convert, you know, anywhere near 25% of your third downs. You should be in the top 10. You should be number 1. So the Steelers, I'm just going to... They may be overrated. Their offense may be overrated. It may be overrated. And, you know, they have these guys. They have these talented players. Why can't they perform together? Yes, I understand they're 2-0, but they put up 21 points against the Browns. The Browns. The Cleveland Browns. They went 21-18. And, oh, the Browns got garbage time points. I don't care. It was a 3-point victory against the Browns. How can you defend this offense so far? It's been disappointing. It has been. And you can't argue that. If it would have been as good as advertised, they would have put up 40 points. They would have did what the Chiefs did against New England. I mean, the Chiefs with Alex Smith look to be a better offense than the Steelers do with Ben. Alex Smith. And I can't believe I'm saying that. You know, but it's true. The Steelers have been, you know, disappointing for 2 weeks. Their offense, in my opinion, as good as it's been, I know they're finally healthy, but as talented as it's supposed to be, has been disappointing. And I know people are going to argue with me. I know people are going to be like, well, Bell had 2,000 yards from scrimmage, and Brown's done this and everything. But then why doesn't the offense score more? Why aren't they number 1 in scoring? Because they should be. With how much we talk about Brown, which how much we talk about Ben, which how much we talk about Bell, which how much we talk about this offensive line, which how much we talk about Bryant, why did this team put up 21 points against the Browns? And I honestly don't know the answer. I wish I could say that they can go out and get a guy, but what else do they need when I look on the paper? Maybe a better tight end? But Jesse James has been arguably their best player on the offense so far. So, like, what else do you say that they need? Maybe a better backup running back, but it's not like Bell's been great. It's not like Connor's had a lot of open holes to run through. Do they get another lineman? Where do they put him? All those guys are making a lot of money. You can't bench any. You can't put any of those guys as backups. Their line looks fine. They don't give up a lot of sacks. And, you know, the past couple years, they had some great holes for Bell and D'Angelo. Do you sign another wide receiver? Because, you know, you look at it, you got Brown, you got Bryant. I mean, They look like they should be dominating, but they're not. And keep in mind, those games were at home. Those were two home games. You know how bad Ben's been on the road the past couple of years? What happens when they go on the road? I mean, they got another easy game this week. And that's good for them. They'll be 3-0 whenever they come face, whenever they take on Baltimore. That's at Baltimore. Can they win at Baltimore? Baltimore's had 10 interceptions. I'm sorry, 8 interceptions, 10 turnovers. Through two games. You know that. And you hate to say that the Bears is a test for them. Because they're the Bears. They're the worst team in football. But you know, you hate to say, you know, you need to say, you know, this team is might struggle against the Bears. But you know how bad Ben's been on the road. I don't need to go into the numbers on that one. Everybody knows that Ben has struggled on the road. You know, the Steelers have lost some games to some very lackluster opponents. This game is this week. Maybe we like the VMI game for Ron Morris. Maybe it'll make me change my opinion significantly. Although I always had the Ron Morris football team winning, so. Like, maybe they convert a lot of their third downs. No, maybe they do that. Maybe they don't have 10 penalties. And they shouldn't. They're playing Chicago. I don't care if it's on the road. It's Chicago. You know, this is an easy road game. This is for them to figure out how to play on the road. You know, this is the time to figure out how to get the run game going. This is to figure out how to, you know, convert third downs before you go and play a team in Baltimore that's had 8 interceptions and 10 turnovers. You know, but staying on the Steelers, though, I mean, it's not all been negative. It has. The defense has looked phenomenal. Even against Cleveland, when they gave up 18 points, they still looked really good. They gave up less points against the Vikings, a better team without T.J. Watt. And the defense is something that, you know, they drastically improved last year. I believe they were 11th down the stretch, maybe in the top 10. During their winning streak in yards per game. And they averaged about, I think it was 14 points per game was the average down their winning streak. So the defense is something that improved drastically last year without Cam Hayward, without T.J. Watt, without Joe Hayden. Now this year they don't have Lawrence Timmons, but neither do the Dolphins. Dolphins don't have Timmons either. Well, the defense can win this team games. I read an article, I think it was NFL.com, and they said the Steelers have the best defense in the AFC. Now, I don't know if I'd go out and say that. I don't know if I'd say they have a better defense than Denver. I don't know if I'd say they have a better defense than Kansas City. But it's definitely up there. They definitely have one of the best. Maybe not better than Baltimore, but Baltimore, you know, they're not going to have 4 interceptions a game every week. That's not going to happen. It's unrealistic. You know, but the fact that they have playmakers that can do that is impressive. It makes you wonder about the Steelers who have, up until last season when they drafted Artie Burns, you know, they never really, they lacked those playmakers since the Polamalu days. Since the Polamalu, James Harrison, you know, prime James Harrison days. They lack those playmakers. Steelers can get some of that. Artie Burns improves, which I think he will. Joe Hayden plays fine enough. I mean, Joe Hayden when healthy, I mean, everybody knows one of the best quarterback in the league, one of the best corner, sorry, in the league. Those guys turn into playmakers in defense, this team is going to go far. You know, they just need the offense. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but they need the offense to help them out. You know, it's kind of funny. We talked about at the beginning of the show the Robert Morris offense needing to help out the defense. But the Robert Morris offense looked much better than the other defense, than the Steelers defense did. Just a quick side note from all you people out there in Plum. One of my buddies, Ian Kist, just shoved an article in my face from the window. It was also from Plum. And Plum's superintendent, Dr. Glasspool, is resigning. So this day just became a holiday for me. Just a quick side note. Just had to put that out there because I know most of my listeners are probably, you know, family and friends from Plum. You know, Glasspool is gone. And that is probably the greatest thing that I have heard since, you know, my birthday. So once again, I'd like to thank you all for joining us. This is Sports with Carney. I'm your host, Logan Carney. And we're just We're above the 30-minute mark. We're just ending our talk on the Steelers, and I would just like to end with, are you really impressed with this offense? Just ask yourself that. Look at their numbers. Are you really impressed with their offense? Because I'm telling you, I've been more impressed with Robert Morris's offense against VMI than I have with the Steelers this year. Just ask yourself, are you really impressed with this offense? So now we're in the 30-minute mark. We're going to be talking a little bit of Pirates baseball. Pirates won their 69th game the other day. Amazing. And, you know, I got in this argument with someone about an hour ago, actually, in the media department. You said, you know, Pirates never stood a chance to your Pirates are a horrible team. Pirates are not a good baseball team. They are not. Let's not, you know, sugarcoat that. But he used the words they were never competitive and they were never good enough. I think people are forgetting that they were two games out in August. They were two games out at the trade deadline. Mid-August, they were two games out. You know, and a lot of people's arguments still to this day, you know, people that believe that they shouldn't have traded for Jay Bruce, people that, and yes, there are people out there. There are, believe it or not, there are people out there that don't believe that. A couple of them are, you know, good friends up here. You know, don't believe they shouldn't have traded for Jay Bruce or a reliever or something, even though it would have cost them absolutely nothing. And when I mean absolutely nothing, I mean literally absolutely nothing. But when it comes down to it, they were two games out in August. And the argument that's constantly being thrown at me is, well, they're in a horrible division, and, you know, they got the Cubs are just going to pull away and run away with the division in the end. So they shouldn't have made a move, and they were never really in it. Well, keep in mind, if they kept up with their pace that they were at before they, you know, fell off a cliff, they'd be about two games out right now. Be about 3.5, I think the Brewers are. They'd be 3.5 games out of the Brewers. Two games out of the wild card. They'd be in playoff contention. The Cubs never pulled away. I don't understand why people keep saying that. Why people keep saying, well, the Cubs are just going to pull with the division. They never did. They have 84 wins. They're not one of the best teams in the league. They're not playing like the Indians. They're not even playing like the Dodgers. And the Dodgers have played, you know, poor lately. Dodgers are the only team in baseball to lose 10 games in a row this year. believe it or not. It has been the Pirates. It hasn't even been the Phillies. The best team, the team with the best record, is the only team to lose 10 games in the season. So to act like the Pirates had no chance when they were two games out is ridiculous. And the reason I'm angry about that, the reason I'm upset about that is because that's the mindset that the front office had. You know, that's the mindset that Neil Huntington, Bob Nutting, maybe Kirtle, that's the mindset that they all had. Frank Coonley, that's the mindset that they had. Why make upgrades, even though we're two games out, when the Cubs are probably just going to run away with it because they got Quintana, who has an above 4 ERA, who has not pitched that good this year, but he's a big name. Why should we make upgrades when teams do that? You know why? Because the Brewers are right now about to be in the playoffs. Because the Brewers are two games out of the wild card and 3.5 out of the division. Because you shouldn't make moves based on expectations of other teams. Especially if those expectations have not been true all season. I mean, considering at the trade deadline, the Pirates were also by far the hottest team in their division. By far. It's not, you know, and that's the reason the Pirates were bad this year in the second half. They were horrible in the second half. I mean, they weren't that good in the first half, don't get me wrong. But, you know, they fell off a cliff. They collapsed. And the reason that is because the front office thought something that a lot of people think, and that we shouldn't make these moves. We shouldn't spend $4 million extra dollars on Jay Bruce. We shouldn't trade away a single A 30th round draft pick, college reliever with an above 4 ERA who doesn't strike out or walk and walks a lot of guys. Prospect. Because the Cubs are going to run away with it and end up winning the division by 8 games. Because of that. You shouldn't make moves because of that. You should make moves based on how your team is, by what holes you are and how far you're out. If this was 2012 or 2011, you think they wouldn't have made those moves? Or 2013? Because they did make those moves in the same situations. Horrible divisions, they made those moves. You know, and part of the reason is that, you know, we experienced a winning team. We're greedy now. We want winning baseball again because we've experienced. They've had a taste of it. They let us have a taste of it, and now we want the whole thing. You know, and people are like, well, they shouldn't have done that. Well, did you say that 4 years ago when they did do it? And they made the playoffs? No, you didn't. All right, you should make those moves. Because the Cubs ended up not pulling away the division. The Pirates took a gamble and were wrong. I mean, people are still like, there's the Dodgers. The Dodgers are the only team in baseball to win 10 games. Well, there's the Indians. Well, if they face the Indians in the playoffs, that means they made the World Series, right? Am I right? Not to mention, how many times have a team with a streak of over 20 games won? Never. I think the longest winning streak, the team that ended up winning the World Series, was 18. Cubs didn't do it. The A's didn't do it. Giants didn't do it. So there's no guarantee that we can just give the World Series to the Indians. They didn't win anything yet, people. They did not. Neither did the Dodgers. How many times have we seen wildcard teams that did not look that good in the regular season win the World Series? When the Giants beat the Pirates in the wildcard game in 2014, Giants did not look good that year. They did not. They barely got it. In fact, I believe they had the best record at the half and then completely collapsed and fell apart. They were one of the worst teams in baseball in the second half that year. And then they won the World Series. The Royals, wild card team, made the World Series. The Royals beat the Mets in the World Series. Not the Cardinals, who won 100 games. Not the Cubs, who won 97. Not the Pirates, who won 98. They beat the Mets in the World Series. And it wasn't the Blue Jays. It wasn't any of those teams that looked unbeatable. The year when the A's traded for John Lester. And they had that rotation that was just unbelievable. Who did they lose to? The Royals in the wild card game because they fell apart. So to just completely write off, you know, a team when they're two games out is absolutely ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And I can understand they're horrible now. You know, maybe they make those moves for Bruce. Maybe they trade for some relievers, and maybe they still collapse. But what if they don't collapse? What if they don't trade Watson, who I believe has given up 3 hits and 21 at-bats since being moved to the Dodgers? What if they don't trade? What if they trade for Bruce, who has two losses since the Indians have traded for Jay Bruce? They've had 2 losses. No, and they've had a lot of injuries too. Andrew Miller, Jason Kipnis, Michael Brantley, all in the DL. Those are 2 All-Stars and one of the better second basemen in the league when he's up to playing to his potential. You know, what if they make those moves and what if they are like, you know, we believe the Cubs are going to go away, but they haven't done it yet. We're going to make these moves anyway because they don't cost anything. It just boggles me because all these people are like, oh, they shouldn't have done it. They weren't in contention. That's your one reasoning, because that reasoning's wrong. It's wrong. They were in contention. They were 2 games out. 2 games out in August. That is wrong. That is factually wrong. And then I'll ask them, why should they have not have done it? What would they have lost? No answer. It was a low risk, high reward moves that they could have made to fill holes that were obvious to everyone. So they didn't have to put John Jaso out there in right field. So they didn't have to throw, you know, insert Joaquin Benoit. They didn't have to trade for Benoit. They could have made those low-risk, high-reward moves. And maybe they're still in contention. Maybe they salvage this season. Maybe they finish above 500. Maybe we have hope going into next year. You know, and I'm tired of the narrative. They shouldn't have done it because the Cubs were pulled away. Because they never did. They never did. Yes, Cubs are in first, but they're 3.5 up on the Brewers. 3.5. We have 5 games up on the Cardinals. They did not pull away with the division. They did not. They have 84 wins right now. 84. They're not even one of the best teams in the league. Again, they can end up winning the World Series, but that's not the point. You don't make moves because you expect other teams to do good. Make moves based on how your team's playing. And at that point of the season, the Pirates are 2 games out and one of the hottest teams in baseball. And those are facts. You can go back, check the records. You can go back, check the schedules. They should have made those moves. And that is the downfall of the season. We get into the last quarter of my show here. Thank you if you're just tuning in. This is Sports with Carney, if you're host Logan Carney, here at Broadcasting Live at Robert Morris University. We talked Robert Morris football. We talked Steelers football. We just talked Pirates baseball. Hockey season starting soon. We'll get into that a little bit in a later episode whenever they get more into the swing of things. But there's a couple big things going on in sports right now. And, you know, I know it's supposed to be a Pittsburgh sports show and everything, but until hockey's back into the forefront, we're going to stay in, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more national news. You know, last week we talked, or 2 weeks ago, rather, we talked Pitt, Penn State. And, you know, I said bet the line on Pitt, and they covered. But that is a team that just does not look good. They just do not look good. No quarterback play, defense. Defense looked good at Penn State, but not good against anyone else. And as a Pitt fan, it's frustrating. But we're not going to, you know, talk about that. Because I don't want to talk about that because it's depressing. There's nothing going for them. I mean, I like Narduzzi and everything, but there's really, you know, nothing really important. So there was a report that came out today that said Aaron Hernandez had CTE. Now, CTE is a very serious thing, and you know it can affect a lot of people. You know, and I feel sorry for everyone that has to go through something like that. I mean, I've had a concussion, but I've never had, you know, as many to give me CTE. It's a very serious thing, and, you know, go through it. But, I mean, because of this, his daughter is suing the Patriots in the NFL. For whatever reason, I don't know. But here's the thing, he's a murderer. When it comes down to it, he's a murderer. You know, he was a criminal before he was drafted by the Patriots. He was a criminal before he went to Florida, and he's a murderer. And I don't think, you know, CTE is the reason for that. And again, I'm not just trying to knock down CT. It's a serious issue. Extremely serious and touchy issue. But I'm not going to have sympathy for a guy that murdered, you know, multiple people, including someone that, you know, thought he was his friend. And I don't understand, you know, what's going on with this case. Keep in mind, this is the same lawyer that got George Zimmerman and Casey Anthony off. That got Aaron Hernandez off his double murder, and that's taken up the case with the Patriots and the NFL. But, you know, for once, I'm rooting for the NFL. I mean, not the NFL. For once, I'm rooting for the Patriots. For once, I'm actually saying that root for the Patriots. Because, you know, this guy was a murderer. That's what it comes down to. And I know this is a touchy subject, I know it's serious. You know, his family's probably going through a lot. CT is an extremely serious issue, and every athlete that has it should be, you know, treated accordingly once they figure out ways to actually detect it and treat it. You know, the NFL should do a better job at protecting this. But in his case, he's a murderer. He killed multiple people. There's no sympathy for that. And there's no way that his family's gonna win this case. Of course, his lawyer is, you know, the best since Johnny Cochran. So maybe they do. Maybe they figure out a way to get some money. Playing tonight in the NFL, we have the Niners and the Rams. Oh, man. That's a game. That is a game. There's two teams that I want to watch in a football game. It's the Niners and the Rams. That is something that I want to watch. This is something too that a lot of people have been talking about, because it has to do with the Niners, a former quarterback, Colin Kaepernick. A lot of people still supporting him. And here's the thing, it's not so much that, I mean, I think kneeling for the anthem is disrespectful, but it's First Amendment. You are allowed to do it. Well, I don't think that every cop is racist. I do think that they do need to train officers better so that situations like we've seen over the past 5 years don't happen. So I agree that they need to reform the justice system, if that's, you know, the term you want to use. I agree with Kaepernick on that part. Here's the thing that lost me about Kaepernick. I mean, the kneeling annoyed me. I disagree slightly with his views, but there's a couple things here that really bugs me with him. And there are things that are never talked about. I don't know why, because, you know, people always act like they're telling the full story about Kaepernick, but they don't. Now, if he believes in this, if he wants to be an activist, why did he not vote in the election? Why did he not vote? You know, he said he didn't like the presidential candidates, and that's fine. You know, I wasn't a big fan of the candidates either. But why don't you vote for senator? Why don't you vote for governor? Why don't you vote for, you know, laws? Because I believe there are a couple referendums up in California at that time. Why don't you make those votes? Why don't you go there? If you believe in this stuff so much, why don't you, you know, put in the effort to go vote? It takes 2 seconds. And then, it's just before this, the moment I really lost it, I don't know if it was before or after the election, but he played in Miami. And the background story is, early in the year, he had a shirt of Malcolm X beating Fidel Castro. And, you know, he played Miami. Obviously, a lot of Cuban people there that have escaped the oppression that is Cuba, the dictatorship there. And the particular reporter had a conference call with him. You can look this stuff up. It's all on the internet. It's rarely ever talked about for whatever reason. You know, this and the fact that you never talked about for whatever reason. But he said, he said basically along the lines of that Cuba treats its people better than the U.S. And he compared you know, the family, this guy's particular story was, he was, his whole family, they got, you know, they were able to leave. They got the passes required to leave and everything. They got the visas required to leave. Then there, his dad was immediately, parents were fired from his job, from their jobs immediately once they applied. 2 years later, they're on the runway, right about to leave, when a guard with a gun comes and checks their visas. Guard says, your visa is in order. Looks at the dad and says, but just for my amusement, you're going to have to choose somebody to stay behind. And after, you know, obviously a lot of emotions, the dad stayed behind. And I don't think he joined them again for 7 years. I believe it was 7 years, five, 7 years. And whenever a reporter told Kaepernick this story, Kaepernick responded with, well, they have great literacy rates. The highest literacy rates in the world. No, reported by Cuba. You know, by the communist dictatorship is the one who reports that. So it's obviously wrong and lies. And then when he said that and everything, he said, well, that's how the U.S. breaks up families with their imprisonment. Look, you cannot compare, you know, a dad breaking the law and going to jail to a situation like that. My problem isn't with Kaepernick. My problem isn't with what Kaepernick did. My problem isn't with, you know, what he protested for. My problem is he seems full of himself, and he seems like he doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, keep in mind, this is a guy that had a full rider scholarship. You know, he was adopted by rich white parents. He had a full rider scholarship. And was the highest paid backup quarterback in the NFL last year. So this is a guy that's extremely privileged. It's the term that a lot of people like to use. So I don't really think he does understand. I'm sure since he's been there, he's been having a lot of rough time. You know, and he is a good quarterback. He is. He's not as bad as everyone says, but he's not nearly good enough to be worth the baggage that he would bring. And you know, he could have done a different protest. I think it was Seattle. Michael Bennett kneels now, but Seattle and the whole thing, their way of protesting this was locking arms with each other, show unity, which I think is an absolutely, I hate Seattle. I hate the Seahawks. And I know some of them kneel now, but that is a genius way to protest something like this. Genius. I know there were a couple of teams that did similar things. The praying in Cleveland that the Browns did was taken the wrong day. They made that up. They meant to be praying for everyone or everything, so they claimed and brought police in the field and everything like that after the game. But, again, my problem, though, with Kaepernick, he doesn't seem to know what he's talking about. He just doesn't seem to know what he's talking about. I don't know how you can compare the United States with all of its problems. And yes, it has a lot of problems. And yes, a lot of these issues are real issues to Cuba in terms of freedom, a communist dictatorship, a place where a couple weeks before that, before that game, there was women protests going on and they were getting beat up and spit on in the streets. I don't know how you can do that. I really don't. Well, on that note, I wish we could have ended on a more positive note, but we have run out of time. I'd like to thank you for joining in to today on Carney with Sports. Your host, Logan Carney. Again, the show will be every week Thursday, hopefully starting at 8, but the past couple of episodes due to some technical difficulties, we've had to start a little later. But thanks again for joining in. I'm Logan Carney, and we'll see you next week.